This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and I'm excited today to bring a special guest, of course.
I'm excited, too.
All the time here at Newsmakers.
Yeah.
Special guest is City Councilor Brad Nanke, my friend, the dedicated servant. Talk about him every now and then, and always in complimentary tones. And then when he's here, I just give him a bunch of grief.
Right.
So that's our job.
I feel very special.
that's our job.
We've got a great hour here. We've got some community news later in the hour, the first half hour, however, we'll spend with City Councilor Extraordinaire Brad Nanke. Thanks for being here, Brad.
Thank you. So, always great to be here with a former city councilor as
indeed,
well. Indeed. So you know yes. where we all come from.
We're going to find out some things, especially since, you know, it's hard to call you a lame duck when you've got about 15 months left.
Yeah.
But it feels like you're a lame duck because you're on the very tiny fraction of what will be 20 years serving on the Salem City Council, Ward 3. So do you, let's start right in it, okay? There's so many things to talk about with your ward and the city council governance and the decisions. So someone has filed to run for that seat. Were you familiar with this person before they filed to run?
Yeah, Trevor's testified in front of city council before. He also just became a member of the Morningside Neighborhood Association a few months back as well.
Oh, good.
So I was curious as to whether or not he would throw his head in. There was a few out there that I question whether they would or not. There's still a couple possibly out there who may come in as well.
Yeah, I was wondering if people come to you and say, hey, Brad, what do you think? Would I be a good fit for this or should I run?
Yeah, and I encourage people out there as well that I see that it's like you have a really good history and would make an excellent counselor. And then typically most of the questions revolve around how much time does it actually take out of my life?
Do you ever say, you know what, I don't think this is in your skill set? Maybe not.
I haven't had anyone ask me yet that didn't have it necessarily in their skills.
That's an uncomfortable
nice.
Spot. All right. So Brad Nanke represents Ward 3 in Salem City Council. He's been there since 2000, right?
I was voted in 2000, took office January of 2001.
Okay. So you've been there. You've been through a lot of different votes and a lot of three mayors, right?
He's
four mayors? Were you there?
I'm in my fourth mayor. Mayor Swaim was my first term, and then Mayor Taylor, then Peterson,
Aren't
and now
lucky.
Bennett.
All right. Hey, I'm going to take a couple seconds, and since you're here, and we've got you on the air, and everyone's listening,
right?
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for serving. I want to thank you. You know, we're a sad day, but we all knew it was coming when you said, I'm not going to run again. But four mayors. During this time, you've raised your son. You've gone through two different career changes that I know of. You've been the great fortune of having companies he works for leave town.
Wow.
But Brad stayed in town. And he'd just stay in town through a transition. He went to school during a transition. He got another job and another transition. And now you're landed here with the State Home Builders and the Oregon Home Builders Association, the Marion County Home Builders Association, doing training. But my point is, that's a lot of time to be steadfastly dedicated to be a volunteer in the community instead of retreating and focusing on something or even considering relocation.
Right. And I've always been a professional volunteer. It's like as soon as I came into Salem, I got involved with emergency planning as I started in with SilTech at the time. And there's still a lot of SilTech people out there. They actually, I think at their peak, had 1,200 employees and, wow. you know, with turnover 20-30% at times, there's probably 10,000 people in town that work for them at one point or another.
Wow. And that became Mitsubishi, right?
Mitsubishi Silicon America, and then it merged with Sumitomo and became Sumco, and they left town in July of 2005. I was fifth from the last out the door.
Wow.
Making sure that the environment around the facility was clean and we had a good shut down on the plant.
So you have a long history, really, in training and environmental, How would you describe it? I'm trying to search for the words in terms of working for the companies and what you do for them.
Essentially environmental health and safety. I actually was crossing over originally with high purity gas and water systems, facilities maintenance, building maintenance. I was the liaison to construction of a couple of semiconductor facilities down in California.
Wow.
And then with the environmental and safety regulations going crazy in the late 80s, really, I had to choose one direction or the other.
All right. So those of our listener that has not known you very well, let's go over a couple of votes you've taken.
Okay.
Payroll tax came before us recently.
Correct.
You voted?
No.
Why'd you vote no?
Well, the payroll tax is an interesting one. They're looking at $9.1 million.
Wow.
And 60-some percent of Salem workers come from out of town. 47%, I think it is, percent of the workers who live in Salem work outside of the city limits.
Okay.
So, okay, that's 47% of the workers right off that will vote one way or another. They won't have to pay it. People who are retired won't have to pay it. People who make minimum wage won't have to pay it because we put an exclusionary clause inside of that. People who live off trusts, retired. So a very large portion of our city will not pay for it. There's not equity across that system. And it for somebody to say, oh, we need to be able to tax the state workers. Well, yeah, and depending on where they work, they're in town for a portion of the day. Most of that is spent inside of their employer's workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And then they drive home versus, say, I live in Salem and I work in Kaiser. I'm driving, and I live in South Salem, so I'm driving all the way through the entire city using more roads than a state worker who comes in and then actually spends money in a restaurant. It makes no sense to me. There's not equity on that one.
Interesting. All right. I appreciate that.
And the other piece is because they said we're dedicating it to public safety. Well, what is that? So we're going to put $9 million on top, and we're not going to cut any of the existing general fund dollars that are going to public safety. Or, oh, we got a new $9 million. All of that's going to public safety. But we're going to take $5 million that we were giving to public safety beforehand and push it to all these other things in the general fund, which is where we have a lot of shortages as well.
That's what we call squeezing the balloon, right?
Right.
Yeah, we get $9 million on top. Great, but it doesn't prevent them from taking money out the bottom. That's what Brad's saying, right?
If we, for some reason, did that and the voters are under the impression that public safety is going to remain where it is now with another $9 million, we just lost a ton of credibility with the voters. And we still have bond measures that we need to put out, you know, $400-500 million over the next 20 years to buy new fire trucks and to fix our streets and parks and the civic center that's going to fall down in an earthquake.
So that's going to go before the voters, the payroll tax.
The payroll tax will go before the voters next May.
You didn't win that vote.
I did not win that vote.
Okay, the operating fee.
I may have been the only one who was unsuccessful in their vote on that.
I've lost my share of everyone but Brent. Votes in the past in a numerous different roles.
Well, and it's really interesting because we have strange alliances sometimes, and you may have two or three counselors who vote no for entirely different reasons, and it's like we're bonding.
Nice.
On the operating fee that has been voted to move forward.
Correct, and that will be inflicted.
And you voted no.
I voted no as
well.
Why
did you vote no?
Because voters should have a say on that. Okay. And everybody's saying it's an emergency. Well, yeah, we've been watching this. When you were a counselor, how many years ago was that? We knew there were structural imbalances, and we have not done anything. In that time, we could have put this out for a vote 2, 4, 5, 7 years ago. And every budget season, we talk about, oh, we're skirting the side of the cliff. And it's like, no, we're not. We're laying off people to be able to keep our reserves where they're at.
All right. We're talking to Brad Nanke, City Councilor, Ward 3. We're going to have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about, we'll give him the quick question quiz about things he feels are going on at City Council, things he probably doesn't want to say until he's on his way out the door. But we're going to ask him anyway. This is Brent.
Say what I want to.
This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Warren. We're talking to Brad Nanke, city councilor of the city of Salem. And the city councilor extraordinaire. Yes, and with a miraculous patience as well. As long as you've had to read staff reports and try to explain to people who might run. I don't want to dissuade anybody. I mean, I want people to run, but sometimes it can be a little dry. When you're reading the formulated staff report, especially when it comes with a lot of regulations.
Oh, it's scary when you're looking at a ream of paper for a meeting.
Yes.
That's why electronic is a great thing.
When I first got elected in 2004, I was told by another councilor, I said, you'll start to learn how to read these things.
Yep.
And it definitely streamlines it because you don't have to, if you already know, you don't have to read the recap and things like that. You get to material things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Brett, thanks for being with us. A couple things. You said you're involved with the Resiliency Task Force, and the mayor's talked about that a little bit. And it's an odd name because I don't necessarily think this is emergency response, right? How resilient will our community be in taking care of ourselves and our fellow citizens in the case of a disaster, right?
Yeah, and that's what it all comes down to, is how prepared are people, because the emergency services providers are not going to be able to respond to them for a significant period of time.
Yeah. So you've been involved in this a long time. You did emergency preparedness early on in your career, didn't you?
I started playing around with it in 93, I think it was. I was secretary for the local emergency planning commission.
Very cool. And of course, you are certified CERT.
Yep.
Citizens Emergency Response Team.
Community Emergency Response Team.
Community Emergency Response Team. If you don't know it, look it up. It's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
You get to
go out to the City of Salem's webpage. Uh-huh. And a lot of people we've been actually doing some smaller training on, and a lot of them are signing up for CERT training, which is 21 hours of a, you know, light search and rescue, med operations.
That's pretty cool. I'd encourage anybody, spend a few Tuesday nights or whatever they do it and get certified. And in a case of emergency, you'll be one of the people that they don't have to worry about and one of the people that you can help others. So,
yeah, and sometimes that's a Friday night for a couple hours all day Saturday. So it could be every Tuesday for several weeks, or there's modified. You could actually, if you have just a whole bunch of people, they'll do a personal training set for a group as well.
Since you have this long historical viewpoint on city council, how would you characterize the current council? I tend to think of it in terms of, we have a crop, and we were just talking about this yesterday on Newsmakers. We have a crop of people that considers themselves a faction that needs to vote in block and fight against the other faction, whatever they perceive that to be. Is it divided like that?
Interesting question, because, you know, when I came on council originally, and, you know, like most people, we just want to live our lives and assume that city council is doing their best for us and looking out for us. At the time, there was a pro-business council. It flopped over, and it keeps flopping back and forth between liberal and Republican or conservative. I typically don't. I'm constitutional, libertarian, kind of, in a way. And right now, it's a progressive council.
Okay.
And
well, I think back at other councilors, you know, you see people, and I've talked about this in the past, and this person's a state worker, and this person is an entrepreneur, and this person has a small business, and, you know, and you know, there was kind of all over the board. And some people were really invested in neighborhoods, and somebody's really invested in infrastructure. And they all just had different focuses and priorities, in some cases, expertise. But that we are all working together. That's kind of the heart of the question. It feels like we don't have nine people working together.
We do on most things.
Okay.
Most of city government is, you know, your boring infrastructure type stuff. It's when you get outside of that. And, you know, my first 2 years of council, we would bring things up that had no business being, in my opinion, in front of the city council. It's like we're talking national stuff and making statements. And to me, it had no place there. We're trying to take care of the everyday city business. It's when you get then into revenue issues. And how we do some of that is where the differences actually come in.
Yeah. So
who has the most money? Who can actually pay it versus being, you know, equitable across the entire system?
Right. Okay. So in times, I'm trying to find the right word that doesn't sound too, too much of a rub. But do you think that there's more animosity, hostility, discomfort, disharmony now than you've seen in, you know, your first 15 or so years?
I think there was more in the first 2 years.
Uh-huh. More than now.
More than now. Okay. There's issues now that are different from back then. The third bridge or the Salem River crossing sticks in a lot of people's craws across the community. With these revenue measures moving out, I'm not one to say that won't necessarily bring it above the first 2 years. Worth of discord inside of the community. And, you know, we're probably going to be doing second reading next week on those two. And if somebody wanted to actually take that operating fee and stuff it to the voters, I think they have 30 days from that period of time in second reading, because an ordinance doesn't take place until 30 days. It becomes effective 30 days after mm-hmm. second reading.
So if I gave you 30 seconds to explain why the anti-bridge contingent were against moving the process forward, could you do it? Do you even understand it? And could you summarize it for us?
They don't like cars.
That only took 3 seconds.
That was good. Good job, Brad.
It's like the need isn't there necessarily. They say that the amount of congestion, the amount of time it takes on the bridge is a very short amount of time, but they're not considering the amount of time I'm sitting halfway across downtown to actually get to the bridge, mm-hmm. and the fact that we're going to grow by 60,000 people over the next, you know, 20 years as well. Plus the fact that one of the bridges is going to fall down in an earthquake guaranteed. The other one we may be able to reinforce to where it stays up. Placement, and the biggest one is cost, because they think Salem has to pay for it all, and that is totally fallacious.
Well, do they really think that, or are they just saying
using that as an argument because they don't want to?
They make other people right. want to think that. And I've noticed that a couple of people coming on to council or filing to run for council, Councilor Nordyke said that, oh, I don't think it should fall all on Salem. Well, nobody ever talked about that who was involved in the process. Nobody ever talked about the cost being borne by just Salem.
No, the feds and the state, you know, Salem will have to pay for some portion of it, because like everything, the interstate we use for intra-city travel inside of our boundaries. Mm-hmm. Likewise, we will have people who live in Salem crossing the bridge as well, but we have a large regional component to that traffic as well. People, you know, coming off of the I-5 corridor that need to go to the coast.
Right.
In the next year or so, what would be some one thing about the council, the governance of the city, or the direction of the city you would love to see change?
I would like to see a more conservative or constitutional conservative council.
Okay, this is a council. I think they're going to be seen as the people that killed the bridge, raised the taxes, banned the bags.
Yeah, and I can't really speak much about Costco as well, but there's decisions that previous councils have made, and you know, you make findings. You can't hold a future council in hostage for a decision. But when you make findings and then somehow change your mind on a finding and put it back out there, to me, takes away that trust potential from a municipal government as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we talk about emotions and everything else. Most of what happens inside a city council is based on criteria, especially land use. And when we were asking the potential candidates for Ward 7 as far as what's your idea and things regarding land use, it was like No, that's not how you make your decision. You read what the rules are, and you make your decision based on what those rules are at the time. You can't just make things up.
This is how I feel about it. Yeah. It does have to go on the criteria, and I don't know. I'm not there, and I'm not reading the reports, and it does seem like the Costco thing, it's criteria. You have got to make your decision based on the criteria. Not even the findings from 10 years ago, but the criteria is this allowed, this building of this size and this zone for this use, yes or no?
Right.
A lot of time. And then every now and then there's exceptions that are being requested, and that's going to be a value judgment, right, if you have exceptions. But anyway, let's move on from that because we'd spend the whole rest of the hour talking about that. So obviously we've established your yes on a river crossing. And how about paying counselors and the mayor? Or maybe the two separate questions.
I've always voted against that.
Okay. Did you get back pay?
I mean, yeah, well, and that's
19 years of back pay.
The last
Brad.
Thing they had out there was like $2,500 or $3,000 a month. Essentially, in my 20 years, I would have made $250,000, for being a city councilor. And it's like, no, totally wrong. I serve because it's my civic responsibility. As soon as you throw money into it, that's not what it is really anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, they say, well, people can't afford. It's like they're at night. They're night meetings. If you work swing shift, you're not going to be a city councilor.
Unless you get Monday nights off.
When I first
right?
came on, our first meeting of the month was on Monday at noon.
I remember that.
And so I had to take half a vacation day every month.
Wow.
And if you were a council president, you'd take the morning and you had a full vacation day every month.
All right. Before we let you go, we're talking to Brad Nanke, city councilor of the city of Salem, Ward 3. Two quick questions. I know you put yourself out there in the past, and I appreciate that as well. Any politics in your future? Any other roles in elected governments?
Maybe down the line. I'm not really looking that direction right off. I'm trying to catch up on, you know, 19 years worth of preventive maintenance that has gone unchecked in my life.
Okay. I know that feeling. Second question is, who was your favorite counselor in those 19 years? The best counselor you ever served with. Who was your, you know, you really enjoyed having them come in the room?
You should see Brent. Wow, Brent.
It's like,
not to dissuade him or anything.
Oh, we got to go to commercial.
Yeah, I can't actually say.
Oh, man, it's brutal. It's brutal. I thought
good
I was
for
a
you,
shoe
Brad.
In There'd, for
I,
that
I
vote.
Still need to make a big list of all of them that I actually serve with. I'd like to, all the department heads, I think I've been, depends how many times you count Bob Wells, how many city managers I work for. It could be 5 or 8.
Yeah.
Because so. Bob kept coming back and filling that.
I asked
Gap
Bob.
In between.
I asked Bob that same question, and even after retirement, he would never answer it. So
good for him.
All right, we've been talking to Brad Nanke, city councilor. We want to thank you for coming in, filling in for the mayor today. We're going to come back from break and talk about music education in Salem Kaiser, which has a long and storied history, and there's a new movement to make it better. So stick with us. Excellent. My name is Brent DeHart, and I'm here with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to 1430 KYKN.
Thank you, Brad.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Thank you, Rich, for sponsoring this segment. Hey, we want to thank Brad Nanke for being in here today, filling in for the mayor. And now we're going to talk with Sandy Wiscarson. Sandy is new to me, and I think what they're doing is pretty cool. Sandy is involved in the Music Lessons Project here in Salem Kaiser Schools. Full disclosure, I was a trumpet player.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I started playing fifth grade, whenever they
Wonderful.
Brought the instruments in. I
tried that. I was no good.
I was not particularly good.
Yeah.
I was good enough. I was passable enough to play throughout high school and throughout college.
Pretty good.
In the marching band. But
I didn't make the team at all.
And
was
I never had
Salem?
No. It was out of state. And I never had a private lesson, really, mm-hmm. to speak of. But the Music Lessons Project is really about bringing people to the next level of their skill sets and their understanding by bringing private lessons to more people, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what getting that right?
Yeah. Well, the really key ingredient is that there's a real – we have a wonderful system here in Salem-Keizer School District, a very strong music program.
Indeed,
with terrific teachers. But there's a real opportunity gap because you cannot get in the large classroom setting that kind of individualized attention for perfecting your skills on your particular instrument or your voice in that large class setting. So it's the opportunity gap comes when you come from a family who can afford lessons or not, quite simply put.
Right.
So we're trying to address that so that students in our high poverty schools, those are schools that have 70% or more of students qualifying for free or reduced lunch. And those students' families mostly cannot afford the cost of lessons.
Well, many of us know that those people who are in band, orchestra, choir, those kinds of music programs and even arts programs, they graduate at a higher rate.
Yes.
Right? And they score
very
better.
Much higher rate. Statistically, it was looked at recently. They were using the same methodology that they did for the technical education mm-hmm. programs, and it came out as 98% of students that have been involved in music are graduating.
Isn't that amazing? And I think I remember students that do music typically score higher in math and things like that, and I don't know how it affects, mm-hmm. how it either attracts people who do well in math or it helps develop something in our brain that helps us do well in math and sciences.
Brain function.
Yes.
Brain function. Music is good for that.
Yeah. Really amazing. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Music Lessons Project. Where did it come from? How long you been doing it?
Well, it started initially as a program only at McKay High School back in 2013. And we realized that, you know, again, that opportunity gap, and we weren't seeing the name of McKay High School along with some of the other schools that were getting all the accolades. And so we went to them and they said, well, music lessons would make the difference. So it started then. And then fast forward to about a year and a half ago, and we realized that there was another high school and five middle schools that we wanted to help that mm-hmm. had this the same opportunity gap. And so we wanted to work with them, and the superintendent backed the idea, and of course the district music office. And then fortunately, a gentleman who you probably know by the name of Dick Withnell.
I heard of him.
I think you might have heard of him. And he stepped forward to help us in the initial stages of the expansion. So that made it possible for us to quickly get in gear and all of last year be in five middle schools.
Wow.
And also North High School as well as McKay.
So currently five middle schools and two high schools giving mm-hmm. music lessons. And you mentioned voice. So this
yes.
is
oh, yes. Band, orchestra, and choir programs.
Band,
equally.
So
absolutely. Equally across all the music programs. Absolutely.
We wouldn't want to discriminate against the viola,
no.
the viola player.
No.
I mean, they're not brass. It's not a trumpet or anything. But
not
you know,
percussion
viola
either.
Viola can be important. Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. So that's the Music Lessons Project. So tell us about you. We're talking to Sandy Wiskarsten. You're the president of this. And how did you get involved? And what's your background?
Well, I grew up in Salem. I'm a product of this school district. My dad was the band and orchestra director at Salem High School in the 40s. And he also was in charge of the program throughout the district for instrumental music. So I grew up in that atmosphere early on, and then they owned a downtown local music business.
Oh.
So I grew up in music and was involved in band and orchestra programs growing up. And then part of my career was in arts administration. So I came by it fairly naturally.
Indeed. You've been in music your whole life. So, and did you catch that, Dave? She said Salem High School. You ever heard of Salem High School?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Which is now, it's now referred to as North Salem High School.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
So
you're right. Okay.
It was the high school. And then they
way
built
back when.
That's right.
In South Salem, but now we don't even consider that very, very far south off of rural, right?
So, and I graduated from South Salem High School.
Ooh, it must have been really
But I've
really
now
new.
Adopted all these other schools as my schools, too.
That is terrific. Yeah, so I've got a question for you. Where do you find the people to give the lessons? Right? Because they don't fall off a tree. So people who are adept enough and available to give additional lessons.
And it can be challenging, but there are a lot of local people and some come from, a couple have come from Portland or other areas, but mainly Salem people. And many of them have their own studios where they teach lessons privately, regularly. A few of them are retired music teachers who are available to give the lessons. We have a challenge finding enough people. We seems like we're always needing more voice teachers.
Oh.
And sometimes circumstances change for people. For example, we had a couple of people lined up this year who had family situations, a death in the family that took them away from being available, or things like that that sometimes interfere, and we have to make adjustments. So it's just like anything else, you make adjustments and go with it. And sometimes often the school music teacher has in mind who they think would be a good match for their program and their students. And of course, they know which of their students are showing commitment, I think, is the key word.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of being talented. It's a matter of having the commitment and willing to work hard and want to further your skill set.
Yeah, it doesn't do a lot of good for you to go to a lesson once a week or twice a week and then not practice.
No.
Right?
No,
so that's not even going to do it. It's going to have a combination of a desire and a willingness to work hard.
So that was my problem.
Exactly. Yeah. you've got to want to do it, because we're not looking for just the talent, but those. So they identify the students, and then they may have an idea about what teacher would be a good match for them, and we take recommendations from them. And sometimes they'll say, well, this happened a year ago. I really need a sax teacher. You know, do you know someone? I really don't know of someone. And so we found just a perfect match. Actually, it's a wonderful story, because the gentleman that we found by asking around turned out to have been a graduate of that middle school where he was going to be teaching.
Oh, cool.
A retired band teacher who had taught elsewhere. And then it turns out he was a graduate of that school. Oh, my goodness.
That is
what
terrific.
A coincidence.
Well, I'm sure you guys will keep him as busy as he can be.
Yes, and he's been having a wonderful time over there.
I've noticed that you list, because this is part of my question, as far as finding, you know, people to teach and help teach the kids the education, music education, is it's not just private lessons, but it's also, you know, meeting with a section, like a saxophone section or a trumpet section or percussion section, some personal coaching and clinics, which can be really important.
Well, we've not gotten so much into the clinics, and our primary model is a small group lesson model.
Okay. It's probably more affordable that way.
Especially because then we can reach more students. And we're still paying the same teacher, but it can be very effective to teach three students together.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still have that very individualized attention. Now, the variation we found on that, and we learned from the McKay model, we learned that in high school, it needs to be one-on-one for a voice student, because the voice is so individualistic, and particularly by high school, that it really needs to be tailored on a one-on-one. So it's a shorter amount of time for the lesson and one-on-one.
Interesting.
Whereas for other instruments, it can work quite well for several together. And then sometimes the lesson teacher will work with somebody a little bit more one-on-one, and then a little bit more of the larger group kind of thing. So they work that out. They're the professionals, so we hired to do it effectively.
There you go. I remember when my son played trumpet a little bit for a while, and he in middle school, I did offer to the middle school band instructor to lead sectionals if he needed somebody in there to just do the trumpet section kind of thing. So those kinds of volunteers. And we're going to talk about volunteers here in just a second. We're going to take a quick break and come back. We're talking about the Salem, the Music Lessons Project with Sandy Wiskarson, and how they are elevating those throughout the district on 1430 KYKN, Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back, folks. Thanks for being with us here on Newsmakers. We're talking about the Music Lessons Project going on in Salem-Keizer Schools. And during the break, we did learn that Dave Morin is exceedingly adept at violin, guitar, drums, and singing performances. Yes.
Yeah. That's not good at any of those.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were exceptional.
That's why I'm a DJ.
If only you had the Music Lessons Project. So it is a community-driven organization. I'm reading right off their brochure, which is pretty good. Community-driven organization committed to raising funds from the general public for personalized music instruction. And this is one of those things is like, make something happen in your community you want to see happen and not just rely on the school district having the resources, mm-hmm. not just rely on going and telling other people they should support this and pay for this, but a community driven, it's really great. We're talking to Sandy Wiscarson. So give us an idea of a kid that's involved in a music program that you've been able to help, if you could.
Okay. Yes. There's several. And some of these stories are from the students and some of them from their teachers. One that was so touched my heart last year was from a choir teacher at a middle school talking about a very shy girl in who kind of kept to herself because she also had some physical disabilities that she didn't want other students to know about. And she was part of the Lessons Project. And she finally got to the point after several lessons of and near the end of the time that she developed enough confidence that she was able to sing a solo in front of the other lesson students. Right. And apparently really surprised her lessons teacher, as well as the other students, as to how well she could sing and the fact that she had gained enough confidence to do that.
Wow.
And so, that story just always touches me when I think about it.
So many people are terrified of speaking, much less singing in public, and she's doing it in front of her peers at a sensitive age.
Exactly.
That's
very
incredible.
Very much so, and someone who already was sensitive about so much.
So if you have somebody who's an instrument player or a singer, and they go into the Music Lessons Project, how much time are we talking as far as how many lessons is typical?
Well, this year we are figuring that we're going to have 950 hours of lessons.
Wow.
And some of those lessons will be for 45 minutes, more typical in the middle school. Maybe they're an hour at high school level.
And how many lessons would that middle school student get?
It really depends. I mean, it might be as few as 10. It might be 15. It might be 24. Mm-hmm. It really kind of depends. It's really variable all over the place, and it depends. It depends on the resources available, and also how many different teachers at a middle school. Let's say it's a band program that might be divided among four teachers or three teachers, typically. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of depends on how the money stretches to do that.
What about their skill level?
Well, you want a fairly similar skill level. The students are going to take a lesson together, but it can have some variety. But we're also looking, we set some standards, and we asked that the school teacher be looking for the student who maybe needs some is showing not only promise, but that they could go further if they just had the additional help.
Yeah.
And maybe they've expressed an interest in lessons. That might be a factor.
Commitment, that's what it is.
Or commitment.
Yeah.
Or it might be something that the teacher knows that the student's committed, but they can see something needs to be fixed. And you want to catch those kinds of things early. And also, we are seeking a feeling that these are students that whose families can't afford the lessons, because mm-hmm. here and there some of the students at these schools' families can't afford lessons. So we're seeking for the ones that can't. And
yeah.
And I know this always sticks in my head. This happened at McKay. One of the teachers said that who was always promoting lessons to his students and saying how much that they could help the students who are really committed, wanting to move forward more. Wait. And students would come to him and they would say, well, how much would lessons cost? He would tell them. And then he said so many times they would look down and look dejected and walk away, mm-hmm. knowing that they couldn't afford it.
Right.
That's what we're trying to address.
That is really important. There's some great fingerprints on this from people in the community. Other board members, Keith Weathers, you might recall. Mm-hmm. The community might recall Weathers Music, of course. Karen Sewell, Connie Sims, Gail Calderazzo Doty has been an incredible community champion for a long time. Ross Swartzendruber. Mm-hmm. I went through Leadership Salem with Ross many years ago. And of course, you mentioned Dick and Gail with Nell, and they've been such
they've
a champion of so many things in our community and, of course, of McKay specifically at times. So how people can help. Let's talk about that, Sandy. And we're going to ask you for a couple more examples of kids that have been touched. But we also want to know how the listener can help. And now this is nonprofit.
It isn't. We are tax exempt, not for profit. And by the way, we are also are on the Oregon Cultural Trust list of qualifying mm-hmm. organizations. So if somebody makes a gift to Oregon Cultural Trust, and they've also made a gift to us, that helps them qualify that. But we do have a website. It's www.themusiclessonsproject.org. And a person can make a gift online through there, or it has the address there, and they could send a check to us also. So all of that matters. And in general, a lesson costs $50 per hour.
Okay, that's a good question.
Segment. And so you can kind of do the math from there. And we are an all-volunteer organization. We try to keep our monies going directly to the program as much as possible, but we do have some overhead costs, and the biggest one of those is insurance. We have to carry liability insurance on the people that we contract with.
Really?
To be in the schools. The district
wow.
the district have... requires that. So that's our biggest single
Okay, tell us another story here. We got about a
okay.
minute left.
Okay.
And that's really disappointing.
I love this story from a choir student directly. Thank you for donating. Without lessons, I wouldn't have improved in areas in singing I never thought I needed to work in. I used to think I was already a great singer, but when the teacher heard me sing, he automatically helped me fix so many things. He taught me how to cover on my top notes when I sing high so it's not as forced or raspy. He also helped me in spacing and taught me how to control my runs. I've always had a problem controlling my voice because I always lost it. But he taught me a proper way to scream so that I don't lose it. And I'm truly thankful for that. I've never been so confident in my singing. Without your help, this wouldn't have been possible.
All right, we're going to have to go now. But confidence building, graduation rates increase, and better music education in the district. Thank you, Sandy Wisconsin from the Music Lessons Project. We're going to do this tomorrow with a Wednesdays with Denise.
Yes, we will.
Be sure to join us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and this is 1430 KYKN.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.